the law already allows that. And what this bill does is clarify that a person authorized pursuant to an appropriate program implemented under subsection A could either engage in shooting from the air, if that was deemed necessary and appropriate, or could engage in land and shoot, if that was deemed necessary and appropriate. In other words, the bill clarifies that both of those options are available for a predator control program.
That is very correct summation, Representative Guttenberg.
In fact, I'm just trying to, in ballot 6 that was on the ballot, I think it was in 02, and just trying to make sure this is in contradiction to that. This is, in some ways, is this overturning that?
I think there are probably people who may testify later that will say so. It's certainly not our view that that's the case. The 2000 referendum, as I understand it at least, did not affect subsection A. It affected only subsection B. And as I testified a little while ago, subsection B is essentially a different approach to this. Subsection B authorizes departmental employees to engage in airborne predator control without having to go through all the steps specified in A. And the referendum in 2000 removed the word agent from that section. In other words, prior to the 2000 referendum, subsection B authorized not only departmental employees, but also agents of the department to engage in that type of activity under B, and it removed that. So it by removing that, it essentially created the situation where only departmental employees can operate under B, but it didn't impose any limitation on who a person is under A. That's our view.
Representative Curtula.
How has the department used A historically, Section A historically? Have
the Department of Fish and Game?
Have they used agents? Have they used other persons? Yeah. How have they used A?
That's a question I really would defer to them.
To the department, okay. Would the historic use of that section play any part in the determination of whether or not this bill might run up against the initiative?
Run up against it as a matter of law?
Right.
No. The initiative, more than 2 years has passed. I mean, there's a couple of ways of looking at it. You could say it's only an amendment, or even if it were somehow viewed as a repeal from more than 2 years.
Does the court, if it were inside, excuse me, Mr. Chairman, if it was inside the 2 years period, would the court look at the historic facts of how the department had used Section 8 to make that determination?
Make the determination of
about whether or not, let's say we're inside the time period for the initiative. Would the court look at factors like that?
Well, the court would look at factors like how the department had implemented the section and trying to, in perhaps discerning the intent of the statute. I don't know that they would look at that in terms of deciding whether or not the constitutional limitation on amending or repealing a referendum was implicated.
Thank you.
Very good. We have quite a few people online, and we're not going to get through the public testimony today, but we will keep public testimony open after we hit the 3 o'clock mark and have to adjourn, but we will not close out public testimony so that when we come back under what we previously heard, we will continue with public testimony. So those people who are online or here in the audience who may not get under the wire today, we'll have another opportunity to testify. Yes, Representative Guttenberg?
Mr. Chair, I think I might have a gentleman from my district that might have come down here to testify.
Yes.
If he came over this way, I'd appreciate if he'd given the opportunity.
That's a good piece. So if we could have him come up and state his name. I am going to ask you, Representative Guttenberg, to please consult with your people from the district before you.
We can bump them up on the queue.
Okay, we have from the Anchorage LIO, we have Dorothy Keeler. Dorothy, I know you've been very patient. I appreciate it. Would you like to testify?
Yes, I would. I'm here to oppose HB 208. As you know, I'm Dorothy Keeler. It's hard to believe that this hearing is not taking place in the 1800s when the only good wolf was a dead wolf. Fortunately, the world population has become better educated since then, and we are counting on their revulsion of what this bill allows to end aerial predator control with a tourism boycott, just like it did in 1993. My husband, Leo, was on the McGrath Adaptive Management Team and has all the studies the Department of Fish and Game paid for that did not support predator control. We both felt it odd that none of those studies were posted on the ADF&G website. Rest assured, however, the media can find them posted on ours. John Blackstone from CBS News, Eye on America, covered our work to protect the McNeil River bears twice in 1995. He covered our work to protect the Toklat wolves in 1999, and stories of that effort are still posted on the CBS News website. He stands ready to help us spread the word on this. I am currently freelancing for CBS News. That's why I have filmed on TV quality broadcast video every Board of Game meeting and testimony concerning that issue. That is why I am filming this hearing as we speak. That is why we created a website devoted to this issue and have showcased it on four of our other websites, two of which currently rival the daily traffic of KTUU Channel 2 website. Since reason and logic have apparently been abandoned, we are fighting this with the only weapon left to us, world opinion. Are you really prepared for the tourism boycott that your actions are leading to? This bill, if enacted, will launch a tourism boycott that will make the one in 1993 tame by comparison, crippling our fragile economy. Actually, due to the speed and reach of the internet, and the studies by ADF&G that prove that overhunting is the cause of the decline, and just look at the bull-cow ratio in the graph to verify that, I feel the outcome will be swifter and far more damaging. Choosing to start predator control to increase moose numbers is like using DDT to increase crop yield. Both are guaranteed to work for the short term, but the long-term consequences, both planned and unexpected, will not be worth the cost. The worldwide traveling public will see to that. However, it's not too late to avoid this fiasco. I urge you to vote accordingly. Thanks for the opportunity to address you.
Thank you, Ms. Keeter. I didn't get who you represented at the start.
Myself and my husband.
Okay.
We're wildlife photographers that have specialized in filming the Toklat wolves and the McNeil River bears and bears, eagles, and wolves throughout Alaska.
Okay, well, thank you. So when you say our work, you were referring to you and your husband's work.
Our photographic work, yes.
Thank you very much for that clarification.
Certainly. Any other questions?
Any questions? Okay, we shall go to the Matsu LIO. We have Ron Arno and Robert Fithian. Rod, are you there?
Yes, Chairman Fay. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. My name's Rod Arno. I live in Palmer. I've been going to the Board of Game for the last 10 years representing the Alaska Outdoor Council, and I've been a professional hunter for the last 30 years. And hello to Representative Masick and Morgan, who have worked on this issue and heard it many times before. I support passage of HB 208. It'll help the state achieve the economic stability through resource development, while at the same time increasing the opportunity for 29,000 Alaskan hunters to provide moose for their families to eat. The change from prey population being the trigger to harvest objectives as well as those prey population objectives is important for the Board of Game. First, as an example, in GMU 13, where we have a population 10 years ago, approximately 23,000 moose in GMU 13. 10 years later, after 10 years of no predator control, that population has fallen below 10,000. That under the intensive management law, AS-1605-255-G, that the population objective is set between 20 and 25,000 per moose for that area. Now it's about half that. Now the problem with just going off the population objectives is the difficulty in counting each moose. What this bill, when it's passed, will do, it'll make it much easier to record harvest levels, reported harvest. And we have a reported harvest objective, for example, again, GMU 13, of 1,200 to 2,000 moose. The average 10 years ago was 921 moose came out of GMU 13. Today, that's fallen down to 430, which is below the amount that the board determined necessary of 600 for subsistence use. Today, their board estimates 3,000 subsistence moose hunters in GMU 13, and they get a chance at 150 subsistence permits. So clearly, we'll have a better record for the board of game to look at to see that those harvest objectives are not being met. And that's just GMU 13. Since the Knowles administration stopped all predator control, 56% of the moose populations that are identified for intensive management by the board are declining. Today, it's important that the legislature and Alaskan voters keep in mind the fact that airborne wolf hunting and land and shoot wolf hunting tools that are banned on 60% of the state because of federal lands. There's another 20% of the state where predator control due to habitat limitations, urban centers, and economic infeasibility says we won't do it. So what we're asking is to have the tools for the Board of Game to use, the tools being same-day airborne and land and shoot, to do predator-prey management on 15% of the state of Alaska at the most. Airborne wolf control and land and shoot wolf hunting are defensible tools for predator-prey management, and I urge the board to pass 208 out of committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Arnold. Are there any questions? Yes, Representative Masick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Rob, this is Representative Masick. I was going to ask you, I know you've been around in the state for quite some time. I don't know if you were here during the territorial days, but has there been any consideration given to bounty hunters? Maybe, you know, if the trapper were to go out and trap these wolves and the state put a bounty on it and paid for, you know, each wolf that is trapped and brought in with a tag. Has there ever been any discussions around this area?
Through the chair, Representative Masick. Yes, you know, that we have had legislation introduced to do just that. And actually, prior to statehood, there were boundaries. What worked adequately, and I've only been hunting since 66, is that when, before, actually prior to the board ban, land to shoot in 1991, that just by having a trapper's license and having liberal bag limits and seasons, that by persons going out in their own aircraft and doing land and shoot wolf hunting, we were able to take those hides, sell them for, you know, up to $400 a piece, which adequately paid for those few people who were proficient at land and shoot wolf hunting. And until the ban of land and shoot wolf hunting occurred in 1991, that method alone without the bounties was enough to keep the wolf predation down.
Very good. Any other questions from the members of the committee? Well, if not, thank you for a real informative testimony, Rod. I appreciate it very much.
All right, and thank you for your time again, sir.
You bet. Robert Fithian, are you there with us?
Yes, Chairman Fate and the House Resources Committee, I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today. My name is Robert Fithian. I live in Lower Tonzina, Alaska. I'm representing the Alaska Professional Hunters Association as their executive director, an industry that annually contributes well over $100 million new green dollars to Alaska. Article 1, Section 1 of the Alaska State Constitution defines the inherent rights of our state citizens. These include the rights to life, liberty, happiness, and the rewards of our own industry. It also states that all persons are equal and entitled to equal rights. Then it closes with the statement that all persons have corresponding obligations to the people of the state. It's very unique to see that the first section of our Constitution lays out our rights, but then closes with the stewardship requirement for us. The Title 8, Section 3 of the Alaska Constitution states that wherever occurring in their natural state, fish, wildlife, and waters are reserved to the people for common use. Section 4 of Article 8 mandates that fish, forests, wildlife, grasslands, and all other replenishable resources belonging to the state shall be utilized, developed, and maintained on the sustained yield principle, subject to preferences among beneficial users. It's sad to sit and look back on Alaska and see where the tides of special interests advocating for environmentalism by regulatory strangulation and natural science have taken us to. These tides certainly have contributed much to the lack of natural resource economy, the pitting of user group against user group, and the decay of the way of life of the people who depend on our wilderness and wildlife resources to sustain themselves. These tides have also left a high mark for non-prudent stewardship of our resources. What all this boils down to is a show of examples about how important it is for us to turn together and work to help cement policies for governing our industry based on common use, proven science, and constitutional mandates. It's important for us to note that in any geographical areas of the state where the survival rate of moose, caribou, or doll sheep annual born falls below 10%, that there's a minimal chance of recruitment of these species. The end result of this situation is that status quo management policies will continue to pit user group against user group, and our wildlife and people who depend on our wildlife will continue to be the losers. HB 208 is a start in the right direction to relieve this situation. HB 208 is not just a bill that adversely affects the wolves of Alaska. The population of wolves in Alaska has never been threatened or endangered. HB 208 provides sustainability to Alaska's rural residents and the people who depend on our wildlife resources for our way of life. The APHA urges you to support and pass HB 208. Thank you again for the opportunity to speak.
Well, thank you very much, Robert. We're not going to continue with questioning of any of the people who testified. As I've already said, we will be back again under a bill previously heard. We'll try to get this one through. It's controversial. We understand that. But we want everybody to be able to testify on it, and because you were not allowed to have anybody question you, we would hope that you would be back. And we will calendar that and give everybody notice as to when that will appear on the calendar under bills previously heard. We have another meeting at 3 o'clock, and that the wishing hour is upon us. And so with that, wait, we will have my staff just inform me so that you will know that we will continue with House Bill 208 next Monday at 1 o'clock when this committee convenes. And with that, thank you to everybody for your testimony and for appearing here with a good committee. Meeting's adjourned.